Your keeper was great.
Oh, yeah. Queven Kelleher. Queeve. I'm going to have it tattooed on my forehead.
I love you when Liverpool do well.
Thomas, it's up for grabs now! Thomas! Right at the end!
Aguero! I swear you'll never see anything like this ever again! So watch it! Drink it in!
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Final Countdown, a podcast looking back at great finals within the game of football. I'm Lewis, here with my co-host Adam.
Hello.
And we are continuing our series on the final days of the English First Division, which is not far from being the English Premier Division.
That's right,
We're on the cusp of it.
2 years, yeah.
2 years away, and we have finally crossed over into a new decade. Some have called it the greatest decade, like the greatest generation, the 90s.
Well, I mean, I think we would. You, because apparently you were born in the late 70s.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so I was coming of age in the 90s, despite being one by the time they actually turned
out. And I, who actually was born in the late 70s.
I'm so envious.
The 90s were, it was the decade.
You experienced Britpop.
It was a simpler time.
Yeah,
you know,
it's very true.
Everything just what it was. Just go, it was what it was.
Walk round to your friend's house, or maybe bike round if you're feeling adventurous, knock on his door. Excuse me, Mrs. Patterson. It's Jimmy in. Again, another 90s reference. Kevin and Perry.
Yeah, they're making like that anymore.
That's right. Anyway, away from TV, comedy shows and sitcoms, Addy, take it away with the report.
Well, the 1989-90 season is where we find ourselves, and this was cataclysmic. Is that a word?
Oh, it is a word.
God, and it's, I just poked into my head.
I tell you what, that is promising a lot. Can he deliver? Cataclysmic. Massive.
It is. It's about the changing of the guard. It's about a new era. It is about English football being reborn.
It's basically why we started this podcast. This is the crack to an addict for us.
It's an enormous season from the start to the finish. It's weird, isn't it, how you can look back and see how one decade effectively ended, and with it a completely... Obviously, the Premier League was on the cusp of coming, but at this point, they didn't necessarily know that.
Yeah, sure.
But a lot changed. Like, we entered this decade not in Europe. England's national team was a joke. We had no kind of national superstar.
No.
Certainly no international superstar.
Yeah, yeah.
And within 2 years, well, a year, that would all change.
Change. Oh, this is good.
Enormous.
You've wet my whistle.
So let's begin. So we start, really, as we've kind of gone through the last decade. And obviously, the change in the guard will come. We'll get to that. But Liverpool were looking to avenge. Last week, if you didn't listen to Michael Thomas and Arsenal's last gasp.
Their robbery of the First Division.
Well, some would say Liverpool choked, but sure. The £1 billion bottle jobs.
Oh, here we go. Turning it against me.
Liverpool, they were out for blood, basically. They had missed out. They got the FA Cup final, but they missed out on the league to Arsenal, obviously in the shadow of Hillsborough and all the rest of it. So this was very much a kind of like, let's go back and get what, you know, they believe they should have won. And they went after it in a big way. There were some new rivals, which was quite interesting. We'll cover that. Liverpool going after the double, which is significant. So for the third time in 6 years, they were in line for the double. They'd only done it in 86. They missed out in 89. I guess you could argue they missed out in 88 when they lost the cup final. So the double masters were going for it again. They overhauled a greatly improved Aston Villa side.
Oh, interesting.
Graham Taylor. Which we'll cover in a second, but ultimately this kind of led to Taylor getting the England job.
Yeah, because we spoke maybe last week, maybe the week before, about the fact that obviously it was slightly a sideways move from Watford to Villa to a degree, other than Villa's kind of history, but he's clearly saw something and been able to capitalise and take them up to another level.
Yeah, I mean, they I just jumped down a bit. Aston Villa own only their second season back in the top flight since Taylor took over. We're led by Graham Taylor, and with players like David Platt, McGrath, and a young Dwight York.
Oh, really? This early? I suppose that makes sense.
Not to mention Gordon Cowans.
Gordon Cowans. He's made as much an impact on English football as Dwight York, I agree.
Gordon Cowans, who took a break from filming Quantum Leap. The 90s references are going to come thick and
fast. That's great.
So yeah, Villa had a really strong team, and they for a few seasons they did really well. And you could argue once Taylor had gone. So that, you know, those who don't know the history, Bobby Robson was going into 1990. He'd been hounded by the press quite badly. Mm-hmm. The England manager, I should say, they'd done terribly in 1988.
Yeah.
How he held on to the job is incredible. And so he announced with a few months to spare in this season that he would be leaving the England job, which was unheard of.
Yeah, sure.
The press celebrated because they were getting rid of Robson.
Crazy.
How they would change their minds.
Yeah, sure.
Following the World Cup, we'll get to that. But Graham Taylor knew that he was going to become the England manager.
I didn't know that. I knew that Robson was stepping down, but I didn't know that Taylor was aware.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was back in the day where it was like, it's an English manager.
Yeah, sure.
Who else is it going to be?
Yeah.
Terry Venables was still a bit...
I think I remember there in. Would Steve Coppell have been in the. I feel
Palace,
like Coppell
yeah,
was the only other kind of viable candidate alongside Robson, really.
Yeah, it's incredible you remembered that having been 2 years old.
Yeah. Just, you know, just absorbing things constantly.
But yeah, Palace had a good season and got to the cup final, which again we'll cover in a second. So Steve Coppell managing a great team, actually, a great Palace team. Ian Wright, Mark Bright, Richard Shaw, so Alan Pardew.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cards player?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, there's a bunch of names that you kind of recognise into modern-day football, and Coppell oversaw probably the best Palace team I remember in my lifetime, certainly in terms of them doing anything. Liverpool, back to that. They overhauled a greatly improved Villa side and a Tottenham side, which we'll come to in a second, to win their 18th League Championship trophy and their fifth major trophy in as many seasons under Dalglish's management.
So... Just to really highlight, 18 league titles, absolutely incredible. It would take 30 years to get one more. That is...
You're grabbing my line
for
right
mate.
Now. It's fine. It's good.
I just can't believe it. Because I, for years, believed I was cursed. Because I was born in 1989.
Yeah.
So I'm like, basically, Liverpool don't win... Since I've been alive until obviously the COVID year, Liverpool didn't win the league. And I'm like, I just wish I hadn't been born. And then Liverpool could have had more titles. I'm the curse.
I mean, it's incredible, really, when you think, like, they were going for the double in 88, 89, 90... And then they won an FA Cup, but other than that, they won nothing.
No. Yeah, we would spatter basically cup victories every 3-4 years, but that's it.
But who would have thought, like, standing on the side of the pitch, you know, just claim their 18th league championship, go up to Kenny, by the way.
It's the equivalent now of being like, okay, Man City, starting from next
season.
You'll win nothing. Yeah, from next season, you're going to win like three minor silverwares in a decade.
Absolutely,
it's
unthinkable.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's weird. So a little bit of context to Dalglish's triumph. The autumn of 89, so the beginning-ish of this season that we're covering, saw the departure of striker John Aldridge to Spain.
Real Sociedad?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Aldridge had lost his place in the starting lineup to a resurgent Ian Rush, who had returned to the club a year earlier after an unhappy season in a foreign country, Italy. Ian Rush was back. He scored 20 goals in this season, whilst Barnes scored 21.
Oh, Barnes.
Which is interesting. Liverpool won the league by 9 points. But Aldridge, kind of the fool guy there.
Yeah.
Who done brilliantly in, you know...
Well, hadn't let us down.
Two seasons. Yeah, who essentially took Rush's place.
Yeah.
And then Rush comes back. It's like, on your bike, John.
It's bad, isn't it? It's like the prodigal son, the favoured son comes home, and kind of the other lads stood around going, it's the John Travolta meme, like, what have I done?
It does feel a bit weird, doesn't it? Yeah, it's a bit strange. Aldridge, it was his kind of swan song, you know, lasted a few months into the season, and then he was gone. And really never, that was kind of the end of his career, really, in terms of how he succeeded.
Yeah, I certainly don't remember. The only other thing of note is that Aldridge goes on to manage Real Sociedad in the future.
Yeah.
Which Real Sociedad have this kind of history of having English managers or British managers, which is quite interesting.
Yeah,
that's the only thing of note I know of.
Well, he also, the only other thing I can think of with John Aldridge is he played in the 94 World Cup.
Oh, yeah.
For Ireland. And I guess he would say that was a high point for his career. And Ireland didn't really, you know, they did all right, but
sure.
You know, as good as Ireland can do.
I mean, better than England in 94.
Yeah, they were there.
Yeah.
But there's that great clip of him going absolutely mental at the substitute linesman guy.
Is that
holding
right?
Up the board, yeah. Because it's like 40 degree heat and he wants to get on the pitch.
Yeah.
And Jack Charlton and John Aldridge are like going at this guy who's holding up the wrong number or something like that.
Right.
At the time, you know, I was very frustrated. I was supposed to have gone on when we were 1-0 down. You know, in the meantime, they'd made it 2-0. We brought two players off and only put one on. So we were 2-0 down with 10 players on the field, and I've got dragged back off. So, you know, my frustration's boiled over, you know, to the point where everyone's seen it, you know.
was already off the pitch when that happened, had already gone to the bench, and they wouldn't let Aldridge on. And Jack Charlton is quite right to be indignant about that, and the gentleman in the yellow hat really exists nowhere in the firmament of international football and has no right to interfere in such an officious way.
It's like, I'll have to look that up. You can't understand him. Like, the poor linesman's like, what the... English, I can't decipher this. Jack Charlton and John Aldridge going at you.
That's great. Being bollocked in stereo.
Yeah, it's a great look. Look it up. It's really funny.
That's good.
So John Aldridge losing his mind at the poor linesman in the World Cup. But yeah, he was out. Rush was back. Barnes was scoring. Liverpool dominating. Said about Villa, they ran Liverpool close, but 9 points.
They kept them honest, but realistically, yeah.
They won it with three games to go. Yeah. So I guess you could argue they've done well there. In this season, interestingly, London had 8 entrants into the top flight, the highest number of participants from the capital.
Oh, that's good.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah. I'm thinking the likes of your Crystal Palaces, your QPRs, people like that.
Millwall.
Luton, Millwall.
Millwall, who... Millwall, who very briefly topped the league.
Is that right?
In August.
Wow.
After, I think, winning their first two games, and then they just plummeted, won only 2 more games, and basically became stuck to the bottom of the table.
Sank like a stone.
The fans must have been like, what? That's incredible. Yeah. No, it's as we expected.
It's as good as it got, 2 weeks into the season.
So a significant story, a resurgent Spurs would finish third. We'll come back to that in a second, but that's significant. Terry Venables. There and with a little link-up partnership between midfield and up front with Gazza and Lineker.
I was about to say, Gazza's in the team and established now, isn't he, at this point?
Lineker would score 24 goals in his first season back for Spurs as they suddenly became, a kind of, I guess, a post-80s cup team. Factored in the league. Defending champions Arsenal finished fourth, and a recently promoted Chelsea were fifth.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well,
so
done.
3 London teams in the top 5, with the 8 that were in the league altogether. So now we come to the narrative of the changing of the guard. You knew this was coming, mate.
I did.
Manchester United, their season began, this is a significant season for loads of reasons. They began well with a 4-1 win over defending champions Arsenal, but they were soon struggling in the league and ultimately finished 13th.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I didn't realise they were that bad. I know obviously Ferguson struggled.
So they finished 11th, and then this league, this year round, they finished 13th in a season dominated. Do you remember the collapse of Michael Knighton's takeover bid? Do you remember Michael Knighton?
The name rings a bell, but I don't know any details.
He didn't write Jurassic Park. It's not like that.
Michael Crichton. Just being like, for crying out loud, Man United TV, stop calling me. I'm trying to write an incredible sequel to Next.
I love that you picked up that reference.
Oh, I love it, mate. He's one of the most adapted authors into film and history. So there we go.
So Michael Knighton, fresh off the set of ER.
That shouldn't be good.
So anyway, businessman wanted to take over from Martin Edwards and put together a bid. And then also this kind of like ongoing thing, which is surreal to think about, but this continued calls for the manager, Ferguson, to be sacked.
Yeah.
11th, 11th, 13th. You remember Atkinson obviously got to 3 cup finals in 5 years, won 2 of them.
Yeah. I think he was finishing 4th and 5th.
Yeah.
As well.
So there was an element where in comparison, Ron had gone, Ferguson had come in, and it's like, what is this? All the United fans were like, this is awful.
Yeah.
Like, we're nowhere in the league, we're getting nowhere in the cup. This whole period, I mean, the Michael Knighton thing, that's best remembered. I don't know if you remember this or have seen it. Michael Knighton, who wasn't the owner, he was just putting a bid in, went out on the Old Trafford pitch wearing a United kit and a tracksuit top.
No.
And performed a keepy uppy routine before the opening game of the season at home
Crazy.
To Arsenal.
Wow.
According to Ferguson in his autobiography, Managing My Life, this display of showboating annoyed Ferguson as he felt it was detrimental to his team's preparation for the forthcoming match. And he was never keen on Michael Knighton.
Wow.
You know, getting the...
Even then, Fergie's sway just started to influence the whole club.
It carried on. There had been numerous calls from fans during the season for Ferguson to be sacked. And media reports have suggested that former Everton manager, Harold Kendall, would be appointed as his successor.
Tell you what, it's not a bad shout back then, like looking at the cold, hard facts.
No. However, interestingly, Kendall was appointed by United's local rivals, Man City, during the season.
Right.
So he replaced Mel Matchin at City. So that kind of ended that.
Sliding doors moment.
Little narrative, yeah. Similarly, and this is really interesting, there were also extensive reports that Knighton wanted to recruit England manager Bobby Robson, who had announced his intention to stand down after the 1990 FIFA World Cup.
Oh, I do like that, though.
Incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, that is a really good, like, what if?
Like, what if Robson took it could over? Have been. So yeah. If Michael Knighton took over, he get Robson in, Ferguson's gone.
Yeah.
Everything is different.
You better believe that Gazza comes to United then as well.
Yeah.
And then Gazza under Robson, what happens there? Oh, that's good. It's
ridiculous, isn't it? United had been trounced 5-1 by Man City in September, and by January they had gone 6 league matches without a league win.
Wow.
And languishing in close to a relegation battle. They were in danger of getting sucked into it, and fans were already turning against the manager. After a 2-1 defeat at home to Crystal Palace around Christmas, a fan displayed the now infamous banner reading, 3 years of excuses and it's still crap. Ta-ra, Fergie.
Yeah, that is amazing, it's isn't it?
It's so
it's
hard
inconceivable
to
now. You can't really put yourself in that position of trying to think what it'd be like for Fergie to be a joke.
Yeah. And that banner.
Yeah, laughing stock.
3 years of excuses and it's still crap. brilliant. So, to make matters worse, United had drawn Forest, who were a good cup team, finished third in the league twice in a row, and the strong rumour was that Fergie would be sacked if they didn't make it through that game. In a tense game, without captain, I didn't know this, without captain Brian Robson, Paul Ince, or Lee Sharp.
Oh, that's the spine of your team.
Yeah. Mark Robbins, a little-known 20-year-old striker, substitute striker, came on and scored a late winner to squeeze United through. What followed was an incredible change of fortunes. The Michael Knighton takeover collapsed. There's a whole big story behind that. Look into it if you want to. Basically, didn't have the money.
Wow, brilliant. Love that.
You had the tracksuit.
Try and keep it on the download. Don't put yourself on the pitch if it's like, I hope they don't look into my funds too much.
Nowadays, that would be a YouTube prankster.
Yeah,
How far through the process can he get?
Yeah.
Like, you got out on Old Trafford and did
it's like
the
fake chic.
Yeah, exactly. Like that. It's surreal, isn't it? Anyway, Michael Knighton disappeared onto the horizon. United went on to win the FA Cup that year.
Of course.
And Ferguson was never doubted again.
Looked back.
Off goes Phelan. Holden couldn't keep with him. It's Mark Robbins. This could mean Wembley. And that was a wonderful finish by a young goal scorer.
Which is nuts. And we'll cover a little bit of how this was changing the guard at the end of it. But it's just insane to think about what a transitional season that was.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of history attached to that Mark Robbins goal because, you know, there were strong reports. All that week, I read a report on Viv Anderson, who was a United squad player at the time, coming to the end of his career. He was saying that he must have fielded, you know, 15-20 questions that week about
the future.
Yeah, who would replace Ferguson, what's the atmosphere. That was the context. Yeah. It was gonna happen. It isn't just one of those things that has become stronger in time to create a good narrative. It's weird.
It existed all the way through.
Yeah. So anyway, back to Liverpool, we were looking on course for another double. Incredible semi-final against Crystal Palace. I don't even remember this. 4-3 lose. I think it was at Villa Park, might have been White Hart Lane. Knocked off course as they, basically taking on Palace, nowhere in the league, thinking Liverpool will walk this.
Yeah.
And then they're into the final. They had beaten Palace 9-0 in the league earlier in the season, in October. Yeah. Really famous game. Famous, obviously, because it was 9-0. Famous because it was Anfield. But also famous because it was John Aldridge's last game.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
So kind of iconic moment where he came on as a sub, scored a penalty. So Barnes let him take the penalty.
Could have done that in the FA Cup final, couldn't you, John? Cheers. Sorry to disrupt you there.
Aldridge was like, oh, John, is it Dave Bessett? Anyway, Aldridge came on, took the penalty, and then at the end of the game, he threw his kit and his boots into the cop.
Oh, no way.
Knowing that he was going.
To say goodbye.
So, in my head, he's walking off in his pants.
I'm sure he is. Yeah, why not?
It's just surreal. Well, you say why not? Like, literally, his socks and his pants.
I like the look. It's strong. It's confident.
It's the opposite of a full kit wanker, isn't it?
Yeah. What's that, a no-kit legend? Is that the polar opposite?
Is that how you get into some of the trouble you get into, mate?
Absolutely, mate. Oh, I'm being a no-kit legend. Excuse me, sir. This is a public beach. There are children.
Put your full kit back on, sir. Oh, dear.
I suppose it's better than being a no-kit wanker. That's something entirely different.
I think I've seen that in your charge sheet. Anyway, so Liverpool would recover from that I also need to mention, because I know you love him, Alan Pardew scored the header.
Yeah,
brilliant game, actually, really good. Is it Liverpool took the lead three times?
Yeah,
and they just couldn't get rid of this dogged Palace side. Had some good players.
Yeah, it's Pardew's most famous moment as a player.
Oh yeah,
like, he dines out on it now and tells the story of it. And
I mean, how many different ways is there to tell a story of a ricochet header?
Exactly.
And a scramble.
Yeah, but mind you, I am being biased. If you're Palace, like you say, Liverpool completely expecting to turn you over and to go down three times and still come back.
Yeah.
Like, fair play. It is
I mean, every time Liverpool scored, you felt, I remember watching it, I remember you kind of, the atmosphere was, oh, that Liverpool win it now.
Yeah.
You know, they kept going in front, and they just didn't quit. It was also one of those grounds where, you don't have them anymore, but where the back of the goal, the fans can basically touch the back of the goal.
Right, okay.
So it just felt so, like, claustrophobic. Yeah. Like, Pardew's winning goal, it's absolute limbs. Mm. Like, it's chaos.
Yeah, yeah.
And you just don't see that really anymore.
No, sure.
So, it's a really cool watch back. 4-3, FA Cup semi-final 1990. Palace obviously would go on to the FA Cup final to face Man United, which we'll come to in a second. But Liverpool recovered to win their 18th title, as we've mentioned, 11th in 17 seasons. But what was amazing, as we've mentioned, is this title turned out to mark the end of their domestic dominance of English football in the 70s and 80s. They would not win the title again until the 2019-20 Premier League season, 30 years later. Yeah. I know we've talked about it, but that is... It's
worth doubling down, like you say. It is just overnight, seemingly. And obviously there are lots of small reasons for it, but overnight Liverpool go from the team, like 15 years, 17 years of dominance, and it just ends.
Is it, I mean, this is pinning it a little bit on Souness, but is it that they, following Dalglish, they just got the wrong manager and they lost 4 years of building?
It's definitely part of it. Obviously, Rushy starts to age as well. Barnes is getting older. He's still got a few years left in him.
But you had international players.
Yeah,
Fowler came through, Redknapp came through. Like, these are players that did well on international stage.
Yeah. But yeah, it's difficult.
Really strange,
I think it's
isn't
just,
it?
Yeah, like you say, and Souness did, and it's an old cliche, but he ripped the heart out of the team, and he had such a different philosophy to all the managers that had previously gone before him, where he didn't trust the youth as much. He brought in people like Julian Dix, like veterans that, because Souness was a hard man, he focused so much on the physicality.
Yeah, Razor Ruddock as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the likes of Barnes didn't flourish as much because they weren't given as much freedom, and just ripped the spine out. And tactically, he wasn't, the best manager.
That's, nothing against Souness. I find him quite amusing on punditry, but he's never really done well other than Rangers, which is that old thing again. Is like, is that a marker of anything? Look at Gerrard, comes to Villa and absolute bombs.
Yeah, I mean, he won a League Cup with Blackburn, maybe. That's the only other time.
He won the FA Cup with Liverpool, that's, I would say that's almost like
a hangover.
It's a bit like Ferguson did in 2013. He just got enough out of the team to win.
Yeah.
But it didn't feel like it was a
vintage.
Like, not at all. Almost a forgotten trophy.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And that is Rush's swan song. I know we'll come to that, but that's the end of that team, really, along with Dean Saunders.
Dean Saunders. I'll tell you what, for an after-dinner speaker, though, you want Dean Saunders.
Is he good value?
He's got some great stories, yeah. I've heard plenty of podcasts with some ludicrous accounts of him. He's great.
Fair enough. Right, and that would mark the end of Liverpool's dominance, which we'll cover kind of how that changes in our significant others.
Here we are. And still Ricky Villa. What a fantastic run. He scored. Amazing goal by Ricky Villa.
So, as we mentioned, Gary Lineker's arrival from Barcelona to Spurs saw the North Londoners occupy third place after a season of massive improvement. Now, obviously, Lineker, having a striker for the first time since Clive Allen, a few years before, is a major thing. Gascoigne had come from Newcastle and was really starting to find his feet and having a target man like Lineker, but then also the manager, Terry Venables. And they were a good Tottenham team back then. They went on to win the cup the following year. Bit of a turnaround for Spurs, who, kind of like the post-Hoddle era.
Yeah, sure.
He'd moved on by this point. So, Tottenham becoming a league challenger rather than a cup team was a bit of a surprise, but maybe not so much with the pedigree of players that they had. Millwall, as I mentioned, they went down after briefly topping the league in September, only winning two more league games and disappeared into you know, kind of the abyss.
Yeah, sure.
I think they came up one more time.
Right.
No, they got to a cup final, didn't they?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And they got smashed in it, yeah.
Yeah, by Man United.
That's right.
That was Cristiano Ronaldo's announcement.
Yeah. Leeds United finally returned to the top flight. And this is incredible.
That's a long time out.
Yeah, but also, this is 1990. And in 92, they win the league.
Yeah, sure.
So, amazing. Leeds United finally returned to the top flight after an eight-year exile. Harold Wilkinson, who will be part of the narrative over the next 10 years, lifted the second division championship trophy thanks to a superior goal difference.
Is that right?
Over runners-up Sheffield United, who won their second successive promotion under Dave Bassett.
Yes.
Who is the promotion specialist.
Yeah.
Wimbledon. And then went to Sheffield United and brought them up as well. This is quite an interesting one. Swindon Town won the second division playoff final, but Sunderland were promoted instead after the Swindon board admitted a series of financial irregularities.
No way.
Yeah.
That is cruel, isn't it? Like, for the fans, because obviously the board know what they're doing, they know it's a bit underhand, and they probably are aware this could blow up in our face.
Yeah.
But for the fans to kind of celebrate, have their moment, and then be like, no, the people that own your club have mismanaged it, that must be really difficult to swallow.
Yeah, so they were initially demoted to the third division.
Ugh.
And replaced by Tranmere. This is like brilliant. What's the FA doing here?
Sure.
Replaced by Tranmere, the division's losing playoff finalists, but this decision was later reversed on appeal.
Brilliant.
So it's
great.
Like, oh, sorry, Tranmere, we've changed our minds.
Yeah.
Anyway, Swindon, interestingly, would be back in the top division within 2 years under
Glenn Hoddle.
Very good, my friend.
Of course, mate, yeah.
The player manager, Glenn Hoddle. Zipping and unzipping.
Superman himself. He can hear the theme rising. The zip lowering.
In fairness, they were great coming up to the Premier League. They were terrible in the Premier
League.
Yeah, they just got absolutely battered.
Who was the Norwegian striker they had?
Fjortoft.
Yeah, Jan Åge Fjortoft. Yeah. That's the only thing I remember about Swindon.
He was a good player.
He was good, yeah. He went on a bit of a run of scoring over like Christmas and gave them a tiny bit of hope.
Yeah.
But yeah, they weren't good enough.
That's Swindon Town. And then kind of to finish, summing up at the end of the season, after the generally good behaviour of England fans, I love that, so they didn't kill anyone.
Yeah.
And only a few cafes were smashed up. The ban on English clubs, which obviously was still in place at this time, in European competitions, was lifted for the 1990-91 season. What I couldn't find out was when that was decided, which was interesting, whether clubs knew they were playing for Europe. I expect there was probably whispers.
Yeah, sure.
But Liverpool, as we've mentioned before, who were present at the Heysel disaster and prompted the ban in 85, were denied a place in the European Cup, having won the league.
Yeah.
So Liverpool weren't allowed to go into European Cup, but runners-up Aston Villa entered the UEFA Cup, and FA Cup winners, significantly Man United, entered the European Cup Winners' Cup.
Ah, nice.
Which they then subsequently won.
Yeah. Amazing.
Which is incredible, yeah. So back in Europe, and that changes the whole dynamic of English football. Certainly as we were growing up in the 90s, kind of mid-90s onwards, it became very much, there's this whole other competition or competitions that are going on midweek. Certainly when it changes to Champions League, which must have been mid-90s, I'm assuming, that became a television event.
Yeah, sure.
It was the thing to watch midweek. And it changes the whole, you know, if you're watching football in the 80s, it's completely different 10 years later because of this juggernaut, you know, that became European competition.
Some would say it was cataclysmic.
There it is.
Look at that. That is great storytelling. At the start, Chekhov's cataclysm, and then you just reference it at the end. Look at that. A real hero's journey.
So there we go. So Man United entering the European Cup Winners' Cup, which they then won. By the turn of the decade, 1999 into 2000, they would have won 17 further trophies.
Oh my God. It's just the reverse Liverpool, isn't it?
And that is the era that we're heading into.
Well, with that to either look forward to or dread, join us as United knock Liverpool off their perch.